Well, good afternoon to everyone. And again, we have a lot to talk about today. There's a lot happening in our country, and unfortunately, a lot of it is bad. But the first thing I want to talk about is something that's going on here in Texas, which has got national implications and is in some of the national news media is covering the story. A lot of it's just raving and ranting about what a wonderful person Wendy Davis is. Now, Wendy Davis is a state senator, Texas state senator, from Fort Worth. She got fame when she did an 11-hour filibuster in the state Senate in an attempt to block a bill that banned abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy and also imposed more stringent health and safety standards on abortion clinics, which basically are generally unregulated, and the pro-abortion crowd wants it that way, particularly Planned Parenthood, because they don't care about the safety of the women who get abortions. They just want to get in that money and have as many abortions performed as possible. So Wendy Davis does this, and she gets national prominence, even though the Senate ultimately reconvened in a special session and passed the bill, which has since been struck down, of course, by a federal judge who just happens to be someone who also believes that abortion should be performed up to and including the time of delivery. And, of course, a unborn child, and I refuse to use the term fetus, an unborn child can be viable, is viable, after 20 weeks of pregnancy. So you're basically killing someone at that point. And as far as I'm concerned, abortion, you're killing from the moment of conception, that is a person. But the 20 weeks says that you cannot perform an abortion because you're killing a viable child. And, of course, viability was something that was originally mentioned in the original Roe versus Wade lawsuit. Anyway, Wendy Davis was thrust into prominence here, and they decided they would run her for governor of the state of Texas because they are desperate out there, the Democrats are, to turn Texas into a blue state. Because we are a bastion of liberty. We are the state that continues to defy the federal government, continues to promote things like gun rights, and we have a better economy than most of the states in the country. People are flocking in droves from places like California to Texas because of our economy. But we have a 38% Hispanic population, and they're hoping to use the Hispanic population to turn Texas into a blue state and make it like Colorado has become because they're using the same strategy. So Wendy Davis has, the liberals have already raised $11 million for her campaign for governor, which is about the same amount as the Republican frontrunner, Greg Abbott, our current attorney general, has raised for his campaign. But now there's some cracks in the armor of Wendy Davis. It turns out that she is a liar. Big surprise. That's what Democrats do. That's what Barack Obama does. But she has been made out to be a heroine because she was a single mom, supposedly got divorced when she was 19, had to live with her parents and struggled to get it, pay her way through school, which included, by the way, the Harvard Law School. And she supposedly, you know, did all these struggles as a single mom. Well, here's the real story. It turns out that, number one, she was not 19 when she got divorced. So she was 21. So she was not a teenage mother when she got divorced. She did have a child. But she was 21 when she actually got divorced. Then she remarried. She only lived with her parents for about 2 months before moving into an apartment. Then she worked to get herself through Texas Christian University, but she remarried. And she married a very wealthy man here in Texas, and they had another child, another daughter. And then he paid for her to go to Harvard Law School while he took care of the two girls here in Texas. So she didn't have any distractions while she was in law school. She was up at Harvard Law School, and he was paying the tab. It turns out that the day after he made the final payment for her to finish Harvard, she walked out on him and their daughter. Left the 14-year-old daughter behind, gave him sole custody. None of this has been reported in the national news media. If you look at the national news media, you're going to hear about Wendy Davis, particularly on CNN and MSNBC, about them raving about what a wonderful person she was and how she was a single mom and she fought her way through hardship to become a success. And a lot of it is, in fact, a lie. But nobody's reporting on that. This is something that, you know, is become standard operating procedure, unfortunately. And it brings me to my big concern I've got about this year, 2014, the upcoming midterm elections. I'm extremely concerned that the Democrats are preparing to steal those elections. Now, we all know that in order to derail or at least slow down Obama's grab for power in this country, the fact that he ignores the Congress, he violates the Constitution, he violates his oath of office. In order for us to do something about that, we not only need to control the House of Representatives, we have to get control of the Senate. We have to be able to block his agenda through the House and through the Senate. The Republicans need to pick up 6 seats at least to control the Senate, and they have to maintain control of the House. Obama obviously does not want that to happen. Obama wants the Democrats to be in control because they will basically sit back and let him do whatever he wants. So they're moving in a number of different fronts to steal this election from the American people. And you need to be aware of this because there are certain things you can do. Number one, you can volunteer to help out the people in your local elections and the state and federal elections. You can be a poll watcher, or in some cases they call them election judges. You can be a commissioner. You can make sure that what goes on at the polling places is fair and that the votes are counted accurately, because that's one of the biggest problems we have in this country. The votes are not counted accurately. Federal law is not followed. And the reason federal law is not followed in the elections is because the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, has told the states, particularly the blue states, that they don't have to follow federal law, that there will be no repercussions if they don't follow it. Now, I'm talking about things like voting list. Federal law requires that periodically all states purge their voting list, voter registration list, of 2 groups of people. Number one, those who are deceased, and number two, those who are registered illegally. People like illegal aliens, non-citizens, that have no right to vote in this country. In Florida alone, it's estimated there are 50,000 people who are deceased who are still on the voting list. And many of these people vote in the elections. It can make a difference. It can make a difference in federal elections as well as state and local elections. In local elections, it can make a big difference. Florida hasn't done it in a while. Eric Holder has basically told the states that the secretaries of state and the people that control the elections and the voter registration list, that they don't have to comply with federal law. It's okay. There'll be no repercussions. This is the way that our federal government is operating. That's one aspect of trying to steal the elections. Number two, and I've been talking about this for years now, in the 2010 election cycle, the 2012 election cycle, the states, the secretaries of state, were told by Eric Holder and the Justice Department that they did not have to comply with the laws that require absentee ballots to be sent to our military personnel at least 30 days prior to an election. Because here's the problem. A lot of times they were sending them out just a week before the election. Soldiers in Afghanistan or before that Iraq or in other places overseas would get their ballots and not have enough time to fill the ballots out, in some cases get them notarized, and get them back to the states in time for their ballots to be counted. That's why the law was passed by Congress to require the 30 days. Eric Holder's telling the states, don't worry about it. We're not going to come after you if you do it. As a result, some states in 2010 and 2012 sent out the absentee ballots just a few days before the election. Some didn't send them out at all, or didn't send out the number that they were supposed to send out. It's estimated that at least 100,000 military votes in 2012 were not counted in the state of Ohio alone. That's in one state. That's the state that went for Barack Obama. Now, if all those 100,000 votes have been cast for Romney, it still might, it still wouldn't have influenced the outcome of the presidential election. But what about elections for the House of Representatives, or local elections for school boards and that sort of thing? This is another aspect of an attempt to steal the election. There's also the problem with the voting machines, the electronic voting machines that are being used in places like Illinois, Wisconsin, Nevada, a number of different states. These voting machines are basically manufactured in Venezuela by a company owned partially by the Venezuelan government, no friend of the United States. There's also indications that we have members of the U.S. government that are involved in partial ownership of this, and that George Soros may be involved in partial ownership of these. And when I say members of the U.S. government, I'm talking about people in the Obama cabinet. Next week, I'm going to have Sharon Maroney on the show. She is in charge of a group in Illinois that is trying to stop the rigging of elections. Now, we all know how good they are in Chicago, particularly, in stealing elections. They've been doing it for years. That's where Barack Obama learned his trade, where he learned to lie, and he learned to steal, and he learned to cheat. He learned to do whatever was necessary to get himself elected. That's how he got elected in the Senate. Basically, there was a Republican running for the Senate who had been involved in a messy divorce. The records are supposed to have been sealed. And just before a couple of weeks before the election, all of a sudden the records mysteriously were released to the news media. He was one of Barack Obama's people that did it. So he knows all about Chicago elections. And it's not just the city of Chicago anymore. The entire state of Illinois is corrupt. The votes are miscounted. People are allowed to vote that are there illegally. They register people that don't exist and then have them vote in the elections. It's one thing after another, and then they really are suspect about these electronic voting machines. In some cases, they actually count the votes and deliver a voting tally prior to anybody votes being cast. That's how bad these machines are. Again, let me say that. They will actually tally the votes, supposedly, and give out an amount that they are going to send to the Secretary of State that so-and-so votes were cast for this candidate and so many were cast for this other candidate. These tallies are being prepared before the voting polls even open up and someone is allowed to go in and cast their ballot. This is endemic in Illinois, and Sharon Maroney will be talking about it next week. Let's take our first break now.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
Hi, this is Dave Smith. Listen every Monday to America's Web Radio, The American Dream. My past background with healthcare, being president of insurance companies, will keep you informed on healthcare and other topics that's going on in Washington and around this great country. American Dream, 10 a.m., America's Web Radio.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Well, by the way, one thing I forgot to mention, back to the Lindy Davis situation for a second, is that her integrity and her biographical information is being questioned, not just by a few conservatives out there or Republicans, but also by a liberal writer for the Dallas Morning News, who basically broke this story. So, you know, this is how bad it's gotten. But going back to the elections coming up and the possibility of them being stolen, it's unconscionable to me that we are members of our military are being denied the right to vote. They're out there fighting for us. They're fighting for our freedoms. They're fighting for our Constitution, and they're being denied one of the basic rights under the Constitution. This is something that you need to contact your senator about. Your member of the House of Representatives, contact your Secretary of State. Make sure that they are going to comply with the law. If they don't, write letters to the editor. Make formal complaints if you have to. Join with groups like the one in Illinois and True the Vote down in Houston, Texas, who are going to be trying to stop things like our military being denied the right to vote and the voting fraud and the voting machines and this sort of thing. Something else the Democrats are doing, and again, Eric Holder's involved. That's, you know, I've called for the impeachment of Barack Obama for violating his oath of office. In Eric Holder's case, it's even worse if that's possible. He not only violates his oath of office, he commits criminal acts and advises other people to commit criminal acts in order to support Obama, support the agenda of a dictatorship. Now, Eric Holder is also suing states like the state of Texas, like South Carolina, like Alabama, who have set up very reasonable requirements to have a picture ID if you're going to vote. This is to keep voter fraud down. This is to keep illegals from coming in there to vote. It's to keep people from coming in to vote who are voting on behalf of somebody who's dead, claiming to be somebody they aren't. It's to stop people from being able to vote multiple times. All of these are reasonable ways to try to stop voter fraud, or at least reduce it. And the Supreme Court of the United States has said repeatedly that it is constitutional for states to do things like this. Eric Holder says it's racist, that it's designed to keep blacks and Hispanics, i.e. illegals, from voting. Anything you do in this country to try to stop voter fraud, to stop the Democrats from stealing elections, you're going to be called a racist. So despite the Supreme Court rulings, Eric Holder is suing all these different states, and there'll be more, to stop them for this upcoming election from requiring a picture ID to vote. He's tying these cases up in lower courts, tying up to getting lower courts to issue injunctions to keep it from being done, and he's being successful at it. Just another aspect of what they're doing with the elections. And then we have to look at the media's part in this, the mainstream news media, and the incredible media bias. They've already unleashed a barrage of stories about Chris Christie in New Jersey and the scandal supposedly in his administration. Now, I'm not a big fan of Chris Christie. He's not the person I'm going to support for President of the United States, for the Republican nomination for President of the United States. But he was considered the front runner. And he was the only one showing in the polls that they could beat Hillary Clinton. And, of course, Hillary Clinton is the anointed one as far as the national news media goes. That's why they're continuing to cover up the Benghazi scandal, because of her part in that. And they cover everything she does glowingly. And any scandal involving her or Bill is shoved under the rug. But they've gone after Chris Christie, and there's no indication at this point that the bridge scandal, that he had any part in that. It was done by members of his staff. And yes, he should have known about it, perhaps, but there's no indication that he was involved in doing this. Other scandals that they're pulling out of the woodwork, a lot of them seem to be non-starters, but they're going to talk about them anyway. This is going to happen to Republican candidates all around the country. House of Representatives, the Senate, they're going to be viciously attacked. If the media can't find any dirt on them, they're going to make stuff up. And they're going to continue doing this as long as they're successful at it. And they have been successful at it. Calling candidates racist, calling them sexist, trying to stifle their free speech, trying to keep them from talking about the issues. This is something that the news media is very good at. And I can predict that it's going to be worse this year than ever before. It's something the American people need to complain about. It's something you need to contact sponsors of your local news or the national news, places like MSNBC, and say, look, you want to keep sponsoring these people and letting them produce their lies and their media bias, then I'm not going to buy your product or your service. Economic pressure can work. Economic pressure needs to be put on some of these people. Now, all of this that I've been talking about is worrisome to me. But what's something I talked about last week, and I've learned more about since then, is even more worrisome. The Internal Revenue Service, we know for a fact, and even though the scandal has been shoved under the rug again, for the most part, by the national news media, the IRS was targeting, again during the 2010 and 2012 election cycles, organizations, Tea Party groups, Christian groups, pro-life groups, pro-gun groups, was targeting those that were applying for 501c3 or 501c4 status, which means they are tax-exempt nonprofit organizations. The IRS was going after these organizations to stop them from getting the tax exemption and stop people from being able to deduct contributions to them. They did it several ways. Number one, they harassed the people in the organizations. They demanded that the officers of the organization answer questions that were not legal. They were releasing their information, which was a violation of federal law. They were releasing information in the applications to liberal groups so they could harass potential donors or donors of these organizations, so they could harass officers of the organization. They were asking questions about their personal beliefs, their political affiliations, none of which they're supposed to be asking. Many groups either stopped their application process or never applied. Those that did apply, their applications were being held up for months so that they could not raise money, they could not get involved in the election cycles and be successful. We don't have any idea how much this affected the outcome of state, local, and federal elections. People were not able to raise the money and spend the money on the issues that they were interested in. Labor unions, their political action groups were able to do whatever they wanted. They were exempt from this problem. Well, President Obama said this was horrible, it would never happen again. He was going to have it investigated, so he appointed one of his high-dollar donors to investigate this, and, of course, that man is basically covering it up. Nobody has been fired in the Internal Revenue Service. Nobody has been disciplined. Nobody has lost any money. Been put on administrative leave. It's just one factor after another. Now the Internal Revenue Service has come out with a new set of regulations, initially for 501c4 organizations, many of which are like the United States Justice Foundation, the group I work for and I'm executive director of and the sponsor of this show. But it also, they also plan on applying them to 501c3s. So again, we're looking at the Tea Party groups, we're looking at conservative legal foundations, we're looking at Christian groups, we're looking at pro-Second Amendment groups, we're looking at right-to-life groups. We are basically being told that under these new rules and regulations, our freedom of speech and our freedom to participate in the election process is going to be shut down for a period of 90 days surrounding during the election cycle. Now, what does that mean from a practical standpoint? Well, I've looked at the proposed regulations. I, for one, will have to shut down this radio show during that period of time, unless I come on and talk about gardening for an hour. I will not be able to talk about any issues. I will not be able to talk about any candidates. I will not be able to talk about anybody who is their voting record if they're already in Congress. I can't point out to you how they vote. I can't talk about the Constitution. I can't talk about how important it is to win this election and get rid of the liberals in Congress. I cannot criticize the Obama administration for anything they're doing. In other words, I can't have free speech. Not only can I not do that on this show, I can't do it in public. I've made two speeches so far this week in Texas. I got another one I'm making tomorrow morning. I will not be able to accept speaking engagements during this period around the elections. Our organization will not be able to put things on its website. Now, we don't endorse candidates, but we will criticize people who are in office out there, and we will criticize left-wing candidates on the issues. And we will talk about people, how people stand on the issues, both candidates and incumbents. That's something else that will be prohibited. Organizations like Tea Party groups will not be able to do get-out-the-voter drives. They're not going to be able to go door-to-door and put on doors little pamphlets encouraging people to register to vote even, or encouraging people to get out and vote, or talking about the issues that they're interested in. In other words, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, for conservatives is going to be shut down for the 2014 election. All the left-wing groups, all of the union-sponsored groups, they are going to be exempt from these regulations. Now, what can we do about it? Well, it looks like there's going to have to be a lawsuit. What we can do at this point is, until the 27th, I believe, of February, or it might be January, I got to go back and double-check that, but I think it's the 27th of January, you can file a protest to these new regulations going into effect. Now, Congress, the protests will probably not work. They're probably going to impose the regulations anyway. But you still need to make your voice heard. And you need to talk to your members of Congress. Now, the problem we got is there's already been legislation introduced in the House of Representatives to stop this from happening. It will undoubtedly pass the House, but it will not pass the Senate. Why? Because the beneficiaries these rules and regulations are going to be people like Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, other Democratic candidates around the country for the U.S. Senate and for the House that are in deep trouble. So I think it's time for our second break. We'll talk more about this after the break.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases, involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Again, it's the Democrats who are in trouble in the Senate, the people that we have to defeat in order to take control of the Senate. They are the ones who are going to benefit most by these restrictions. If I cannot, and other people like me cannot come out and criticize somebody like Mary Landrieu, point out how she's voted, point out that she voted for Obamacare, for example, because she was paid to do so by the Obama administration. She was bribed. She didn't receive any money personally, but she received money that she wanted for her state and for certain projects that her supporters wanted her to get, the people that contributed to her campaign. So obviously these Democrats in the Senate are not going to vote to stop these restrictions from taking place. So where does that leave us? We're going to have to go to court. I'm going to be personally affected by this. And I personally don't intend to follow the rules and regulations. But if I don't follow them, then they will try to shut down our organization. And I can't allow that to happen. So we're going to be fine. We're already laying the groundwork to go to court on this. And I'm sure there are other organizations out there that are going to be doing the same thing. You're going to need to support us in that. We're going to need financial help. See, at the United States Justice Foundation, we don't charge anybody anything for representing them when constitutional issues are involved. And that's all we do, is deal with constitutional issues. But we still have to pay outside attorneys to do some of the work because we don't have the staff to do it all on our own. We've got too many irons in the fire. There are too many things going on right now, too many issues we would like to be involved in litigation. But we're also an educational group trying to put out information like my booklet, Our Constitution, to educate people about the Constitution. So we need financial support. Find out more about what we're doing, go to usjf.net. It's the initials of the United States Justice Foundation, usjf.net. Go there and we're upgrading that website. Actually, we're revamping the website. We're going to be coming out with an entirely new website shortly. But in the meantime, you can go to the one we currently have, go to the top, and there's a link that says donate. And you can find out, click on that link and find out how you can donate online or how you can just put a check in the mail to us. Again, usjf.net. We particularly need money right now, not only to prepare to fight the Obama administration and the IRS on stifling free speech, but on the veterans cases that I keep talking about. Just to recap briefly what's happening, veterans, thousands of veterans, are receiving letters from the VA saying because of their physical or mental disabilities, they're going to be incompetent, be declared incompetent to handle their own financial affairs, And once they're declared incompetent by the VA, and there's no adjudication process here, this is being done by bureaucrats, once they're declared incompetent for any reason whatsoever, then they can no longer own, purchase, possess, or transport firearms or ammunition. If they do, they're guilty of a felony. And they're put on the next list of people who cannot legally purchase firearms in this country. There are at least 159,000 veterans on that list. We estimate that 99.9% of them don't belong there. They're not convicted felons. They're not drug users. They are not people that are illegal drug users. They are not people who have been adjudicated to be mentally ill, to being a danger, the point of being a danger to themselves or others. Yet they're being put on this list. Some of them have never even received the letter, don't even know they're on the list until they go and try to buy a firearm. We have requested, we filed two Freedom of Information Act requests with the VA, asking them what criteria they're using for declaring people incompetent, because it appears it's minor PTSD, which is not even classified as a mental illness. It can be just because they were depressed at some point over the loss of a friend in combat or the loss of a loved one or for any reason whatsoever. If they let their spouses pay the family bills, they can be put on the list. They're basically being put on the list for no reason at all. We wanted to know what criteria the VA was using because obviously they're not following the law. The VA refused to answer. We also wanted to know what the authority was for these people being put on, these veterans being put on the NICS list, which is the National Instant Criminal Background Checklist, simply because they were declared incompetent to handle their financial affairs by the VA. Again, the VA refused to respond. We have filed a suit against the VA. They finally said, well, we'll give you the information you want. We'll respond. Well, they sent us an email that said, look at our website. Well, I'd already looked at their website. What we wanted to know was not on the website. So they ignored us. We took them to court. A judge has basically ordered them to start complying. They sent us a few documents, but not everything that we need. So we're continuing with that lawsuit. In the meantime, we're preparing lawsuits on behalf of individual veterans. Now, we have been wanting to do this for several months, but frankly, we have not been able to raise the money we need yet. We are not going to charge the veterans or their families anything for this. But we estimate these lawsuits, the two of them combined, are going to cost anywhere from $250,000 to $500,000. We're getting some lawyers to volunteer to help us, but we really want to do this right, and we want to hire some outside attorneys. I am looking right now because I've been hearing from veterans all over the country, and the horror stories abound. We need to have a veterans in the state where we want to file the suit. I would like for the suit to be filed here in North Texas or anywhere in Texas. That way I can personally be the lead counsel on it. I'm not going to be paid anything extra for doing that. It's going to be a lot of work, and I will need help because I haven't tried a case in about 20 years in federal court. So we will need to hire some people to help me. So we're going to need the money for court costs. We're going to need the money for deposition costs. We're going to need the money to fly in witnesses. We've got some medical people that are willing to come in and testify for us. We've got veterans from around the country we're going to need to bring in. We've got a lot of work to do. It's going to be very expensive. So go to usjf.net and donate to us. $5, if that's all you can afford, then that's great. $500, if you can afford that, that's fantastic. If you can afford $5,000 or more, that gets us on the right track. We need to have this money so we can get these suits going. We need some initial donations to come in, and we need those to come in fairly quickly. So please consider donating and helping us out. The veterans don't deserve this. And I've written some articles on my website, on my blog, about this very issue. And you can go to my blog and you can look at the articles. The initial one I wrote was Disarming America's Heroes. And that was back in February of last year. And I've written subsequent articles since. And you can go there and you can read those articles and you can send them out to people to your friends, and you can encourage them to donate. You can also help us out by helping me find some veterans, more veterans, to come forward who receive these letters or have been declared incompetent and who have tried to appeal, and the appeal has been held up by the VA, or in some cases veterans are being told that if you appeal this, if you try to stop us from doing this to you, we are going to suspend your benefit payments as long as the appeal is pending. That's extortion. If you're a veteran and you're going through any of this, go to usjf.net. You can find out how you send an email to me. Myself or my assistant will respond to you as quickly as possible. We'll get information from you about what your situation is. And we're particularly looking for information not just about what's happening to the veterans, but we understand some veterans say their family members are being told that once the veterans have been declared incompetent, people that live with them cannot own firearms either. Veterans are being told that they, in addition to being put on the NICS list, so they can't purchase firearms legally, they are being told that they are going to be put on the Do Not Fly list, that they are going to be have their passports canceled if they have passports, that they are going to be told to register as a mental defective with their local sheriff's department. All of this, we're trying to confirm that information. We do know, for example, that in one case, a woman whose husband was killed in Vietnam and has been receiving benefit payments from the VA for years, went to the VA and was asked how she handles payment of her bills. She said, it's simple. It's all automated. All of my bills are paid automatically out of my checking account every month. I've seen the letter that was sent to her that indicated that on that basis alone, the VA was declaring her incompetent, and she is now on the next list. Two veterans I talked to the other day, and this is what we're looking at as a possible, one of the possible triggers. We know the Obama administration has ordered the VA to ask anybody that comes in there, do they own a firearm? This is one of the first questions they're asked. I made a speech last night to a group, and one of the people there was a veteran who had just come from the VA and said that they asked him that very question, the one here in Dallas. But the two veterans I talked to the other day basically were told, well, they went to the VA, and there was a whole series of questions they were asked. The final question that they were asked was, would you like to have somebody on your checking account with you that could handle things for you if something were to happen to you? Well, that's a rather innocuous question. And most of the veterans would say, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Put my wife on there, my husband, put one of my grown children, put my parents. You know, they would say something like that. Interestingly enough, these two veterans said that they got that letter, and I'm talking about from the VA, that they were being just considered to be incompetent within 7 days of answering that question at the VA. This is a setup. This is a trigger. This is what they're using to go after the veterans. This is one of the things that will trigger it. And there are other things that will trigger it. We'll talk more about that after our final break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Apparently, another thing that will trigger veterans getting these letters is anything in their medical records, like the use of the word depression. You know, if a veteran comes home from Afghanistan, or he'd come home from Iraq and they'd lost a buddy over there that was killed, they may be depressed about it. And they felt free to tell the VA that they have a doctor, it's anybody at the VA, that, yeah, sometimes I get depressed. They may or may not been treated for this depression. They may or may not have seen a psychiatrist or psychologist or been put on any type of medication. But if they were, and the medication shows up in their medical records, that is also a trigger for getting this letter. Or even if they weren't put on medication, just the word depression being in their medical records can trigger this. Veterans are being told that in order to get benefits, the more disabled they are, the more benefits they get. Veterans are being told that they need to accept a diagnosis of PTSD to get the extra benefits, even if they don't believe they've got PTSD. They're being told they'll lose their benefits if they don't accept. They'll lose the benefits they have if they don't accept a diagnosis of PTSD. Then they're told they have to take medication for it. I have been told by a psychologist who deals with this type of thing that this medication may be responsible for the rise in suicides among not only veterans but active-duty military personnel. So again, veterans are being threatened and extorted. Once the PTSD diagnosis is made, even if it's incorrect, the burden of proof switches to the veteran to prove that they're not incompetent. See, there's no due process here. Our veterans are not only losing their Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms, they're losing their Fifth Amendment rights to due process. Fifth Amendment says you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Being declared mentally incompetent and told you cannot own a firearm is certainly a violation of your liberty and your right to own property. Yet veterans are being told that we're going to do this, and the only way you can prevent it is you have to prove that you are not incapable of handling your own affairs. You have to hire a psychiatrist on your own or go to a medical doctor and pay that doctor, and you need to get us that information. And even the veterans who sent that type of information are still being declared incompetent. Or they're waiting for a year or 2 years for their appeal to be decided. In the meantime, the VA is already sending the information to the FBI and they're being put on the mixed list. So the whole thing is a setup. In New York, they've taken it one step further because they want to disarm everybody in the state of New York. They are sending out information to the state police, private medical records of individuals showing what medications they've taken in their lifetime. If you have ever taken a medication for depression, if you were diagnosed as a child with ADD or ADHD and you took medication for that, those medications will trigger a declaration by the state that you cannot own a firearm in the state of New York. What does that mean to the rest of the country? Well, think about this. A couple of weeks ago, with very little fanfare, I think it was done on a Friday afternoon so it wouldn't hit the news cycle, Obama signed two more executive orders regarding gun control. Well, he calls them executive actions. But that's semantics. The point is that they're illegal and they're unconstitutional. But these two are, orders basically said Obama has decided to tell people, tell the states that they do not have to comply with a federal law. And he's not got no authority to do that. He's supposed to enforce the laws passed by Congress. Article 2 of the Constitution tells him that that's what he's supposed to do. He's not supposed to make laws. He's not supposed to rewrite laws. He's not supposed to amend laws on his own. He's not supposed to decide what to enforce and what not to enforce. We know that he does all of this. Well, these new executive actions of his, basically saying the HIPAA law, which is the law that requires privacy of our medical records, the states, private institutions, and state hospitals cannot release our medical records to anybody without our permission. Obama says, as of now, you no longer have to comply with that. If certain medications are being taken, if a person has ever been depressed, if the word depression appears in your medical records, if you have PTSD or have been even considered as being having PTSD, that information needs to be sent by the states to the federal government so these people can be put on the next list. Privacy is gone under the Obama administration. This is why we have to win these lawsuits on behalf of these veterans. Because if we can't stop it here, they're going to get by with it, and they're going to start doing it to everybody. Let's face it, the Internal Revenue Service, that bastion of integrity in Washington, D.C., is already going to have access to all of our medical records under Obamacare. In January of last year, Obama also issued 23 executive actions on gun control. And one of those amended Obamacare, which he's done about 17 times on his own. But basically, the provisions in Obamacare, which was pretty much sneaked in by conservatives in Congress, it said that doctors cannot ask their patients about firearm ownership. Obama, with a stroke of the pen, said, well, I'm changing that. Obamas not only can ask about firearm ownership, they are encouraged to do so. Pediatricians, by their own organization and by the Obama administration, are being encouraged to ask your children. You take your child to the doctor, pediatricians are being told to ask the child, do mommy and daddy own a gun? That will then go in their medical records. Your names are going to be in their medical records. That can, and I predict will, trigger you being put on the next list. We've got the Center for Disease Control, which has been pressured and is apparently considering declaring firearm ownership as being hazardous to your health and to the health of your children, possibly even declaring firearm ownership as a sign of mental illness. I've written a recent article on my blog called All Gun Owners Are Mentally Ill? And it's about exactly this, what they're doing to try to use feigned mental illness, fake mental illness, and even sometimes physical problems as far as the vets go, to take away our right to keep and bear arms. This has been done by dictators for years. Adolf Hitler, his minions were particularly good at it. Joseph Stalin did the same thing in the Soviet Union. Declare people mentally ill, to shut them up, to disarm them. If you want to read that article and my other blog articles, you can go to Michael Connelly, C-O-N-N-E-L-L-Y, .jigsy, J-I-G-S-Y, .com. If you want to subscribe to that, to my blog, all you have to do is send me an email. My email address is there. And, just send me an email, and I will put you on my email mailing list. You're not going to get forwards from me. You're not going to get a bunch of junk from me. The only emails you will receive are emails I send out telling you when I post a new article on my blog. Again, it's www.michaelconnolly.jigsy.com. You can also find out about my books. My book, The Mortarman, about my dad's unit during World War II, continues to sell very well. You can find out ordering information there if you want a signed copy of it. Also about my novel, about a couple of other books I've written, and about the booklet on the Constitution called Our Constitution, where I take each article, each section, each amendment of the Constitution, and I put them in the booklet the way they were originally written, and then I put in my comments about what they mean. We are now on our third printing of that booklet. It has become extremely popular. To order the copies of that booklet, or to order, find out how to order multiple copies at substantial discounts, go to the website for the Constitutional Law Alliance, which is www.constitution.jigsy.com. Also, send me emails and let me know what you want me to do on the show. Let me know what you want to hear me talk about. Let me know your thoughts and ideas on what we do talk about. I appreciate all the listeners I have out there, and I appreciate your support. And please, please, go to usjf.net. Find out what we're doing. Find out how we're fighting for this country. Find out how we're trying to protect the liberties and the Constitution. Join us. Send your contribution. Get your friends and relatives to do the same. And remember, next week I'm going to have Sharon Maroney on here. We're going to talk about stealing elections and about the voting machines and about what she and her organization and other people around the country are doing to try to protect election integrity. I look forward to talking to you next week.